I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts. Sarah Reitzman here. Thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts. Today's episode is another extra special one. While we are self-isolating during the coronavirus pandemic, Laura and I have decided to interview each other. We had been saving this for our one-year anniversary of the podcast in July, but thanks to the pandemic, Creative Guts' birthday came a little early this year. So today's guest is Laura Harper Lake of Artful Harper Studios and Creative Guts. Laura is an interdisciplinary artist and graphic designer who dabbles in literally everything. Oil painting, printmaking, writing, watercolors, digital art, electric ukulele, videography, and of course, podcasting. Laura's creative energy is awe-inspiring, which is why I lovingly call her the idea machine. If you've been listening for a while, you know this lady needs no further introduction. Let's jump right into this episode of Creative Guts with my co-host, Laura Harper Lake. Laura Harper Lake, welcome to the Creative Guts podcast.
Hey, thanks, Sarah Reitzman.
I should say, welcome to the other side of the microphone.
I know, it's so weird and different on this side.
I am very excited to interview you for a few reasons. The most obvious being because you're an awesome creative, and so, like, duh, we have lots of cool things to talk about. But also because for me and our regular listeners, we already know so much about you that we can jump right to, like, the wicked cool deep stuff, and we don't have to do, like, the, oh, tell us about yourself thing. Like, we know you.
It's the inner guts that you're going to dive into.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get right into the messy, messy stuff. Okay, Laura, I want to start by asking you about your identity as an artist and how you grew comfortable labeling yourself as an artist. Did you ever have imposter syndrome or feel like a fraud calling yourself an artist? Was there ever a time where you were kind of freaked out accepting somebody's actual money in exchange for your art?
That's a lot of questions. I'm going to unpack them one at a time. I have identified as an artist since I was in the third grade. I may have mentioned this before, but my third grade yearbook, we had to pick out our future professions, and mine was artist, and it pretty much stuck. I always identified as that, and I went to school for it, and there just has been no question to me. As far as imposter syndrome, making art, I feel super confident that I'm an artist. I'm doing what I love. I'm following my passion. As far as speaking about it, giving presentations, you know, standing up in front of folks and saying, hey, I'm an expert in art, and I know, you know, that is when I get imposter syndrome. As far as who am I to say anything, which is ironic because I started a podcast where I kind of come off acting like I know a bunch about this. I do, but at the same time, the self-reflection of having other people actually listen to you, that's when the imposter syndrome comes in, I think. And I'm like, oh gosh, ugh, don't listen to me. Just make your art, do your thing, you know? And as far as making money, I was like, I'll take your cash. Yeah. Like, it was the most exciting, thrilling thing. I sold artwork when I was in college in the summertime at a gallery in Maine, and it was actually a couple, I think from New Jersey, who were vacationing, and they bought it for their daughter, and she lived in England. And I just remember, holy cow, my art is international. And, you know, getting money for it was certainly helpful for paying for college. And from there, it's been an up and down road. Obviously, more of a common thing now for me because I started my business, Artful Harper Studios, 4 years ago, and I've been, you know, displaying work in galleries and selling online and stuff like that. But it's, in the beginning, it was very exciting. And I think the trickiest part was just trying to figure out, at what price point do you want to be at? How do you price your art? That's one of the most difficult things I hear artists talk about. How do I price my art? What is it worth? And it's a very subjective, tough thing. There's supposedly equations that you can help guide you along. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's kind of an experimentation.
Wow, that's fascinating. I'm always impressed by people who just kind of knew what they wanted to do when they grew up and then did it. It feels like such a foreign concept.
There was definitely, you know, in middle school and early high school, when you're, you know, get down to business, what are you going to be? You know, that part, I definitely explored other avenues, always thinking, I'm always going to be an artist, you know, what I do when I'm not paying the bills doing something else. And I thought about being a journalist, which I know you did too. I thought about being a therapist or psychologist. I thought about being an attorney. Most of these were influenced by movies I watched after watching 12 Angry Men and To Kill a Mockingbird. I want to fight for justice. You know, I decided I wanted to be an attorney, and then I learned way more about how tough that is, and it's really not what I want to do. But I definitely kind of had like a want to make a world a better place and do something I like at the same time vibe. But I always was making art. I loved it so freaking much. And after talking with guidance counselors that were like, you can go to school for art. You can do that. And, you know, it might be tricky. It might not be, but, you know, you should explore that. And I'm so glad I did.
Me too. Especially because, well, because if you didn't, we wouldn't have this podcast and be talking right now.
Most likely
but
not.
Also because I can't see you as an attorney.
I mean, I do like a good blazer or, you know, Murphy Brown it up.
It's all about the clothing.
Yeah, I really just like the cinematography of it all. But yeah, that's not my deal. Oh, I wanted to be a writer too. And I do think that that is, you know, just another art form. But I think it was creativity. Again, I was just always being pulled in that direction.
That's so cool. Let's talk about, I told you we'd talk about the guts. Let's talk about guts. What are the scariest parts for you? And how do you tackle your fears?
One of the scariest things is if you're the type of artist who is very much taking from within and using stuff that's happening internally and manifesting that so that others can see what's, you know, wearing your heart on your sleeve. It's wearing your heart on your canvas or on the dance floor or however you make what you make. That is very scary because a lot of folks are afraid of judgment. If you have stage fright, you know, you're nervous about being judged, about people thinking you're stupid, about people thinking you're ridiculous or dramatic or whatever negative thing that is the worst thing to you. When you make art and then you, especially when you hang it up on a wall, you actually are asking and seeking the world to look at it, whether or not you want them to judge it out loud. You are asking them to judge it in a way. And I think that is scary. It's basically like going on stage.
Have you ever had a piece of artwork judged in some sort of negative way?
I mean, it's not supremely bad, but so I have these photo transfers that I did of pictures of an MRI of my own brain and my own face, and they are, you know, transposed onto wood, and they look fascinating and creepy and weird. I was sitting in my studio, and a woman saw the pieces and went, huh, those are weird, and I think weird is a good thing, but the way she said it did not mean it was a good thing. She meant, ugh. Who made this? Why'd you make this? Even though I was sitting right there, it was peculiar. You'd think she would have kind of toned it down, but I could tell she was judging it in a negative way. And it didn't faze me at all. I laughed and I thought it was really funny, probably because it was so passive. And I also love the piece, so I don't really care. I'm at the point where a lot of times I don't really care about people's opinions now. I think I did when I was younger and wanting to prove myself, especially out of art college. But I think if someone outwardly said, "You're hot garbage, that's terrible," you know, that would probably sting. You know, yeah. The judgment of that. But yeah, there's not really an outward attack on my art typically. The quiet negativity of that is when you submit artwork for a call to art and you don't get selected, which I've been on both sides of, or all sides of. I've been selected for things, I have been rejected for things, and I have been a person who has accepted and rejected for our Creative Gut zine and for some other things I've been involved with in the past. So all around, it's tough. We're judging, we're deciding, we're picking someone over the other. There's the last kid not being picked for the dodgeball team, you know, and it can sting when you get rejection after rejection, but there's so much saturation of creatives that you're not going to get into everything. They base it on lots of things, and just because it wasn't right for them doesn't mean it's not right for someone else. And ultimately, I make art for me, and of course I want to share it with folks, but the process of me making it and enjoying it while I made it doesn't go away because someone rejected it, you know?
That's beautiful. So you still love it even if they don't, because art's so subjective, doesn't matter anyways.
Yeah. If I'm proud enough to, I believe in it enough to put it out there, then I do love it. You know, I like the art that I make. And if I don't like the art that I make, it usually gets recycled into a pile of bastard paintings that never see the light of day, or I use the other side of them, or, you know, they rebirth in a new way. I like feedback to know whether or not it's being interpreted correctly, but everybody interprets things so differently that it's okay if you don't get it.
Yeah, criticism in art is tricky, and I try to avoid it specifically because I recognize that everybody is in sort of a different, like, they're somewhere on the spectrum of learning. Mm-hmm. And even for you, with, like, how many mediums do you do? All of them? That for each of them, you're going to be at a different sort of level of learning with each of them. Like, you're surely more proficient in some of them than in others.
Absolutely. And I was actually just talking to someone about this. Because I'm an interdisciplinary artist and I leapfrog from thing to thing to thing, like, I just picked up gouache paints again after not using them for a while. And I was like, wait, how do these work again? This is weird. You know, like, I have to, every time I switch something, if I'm working in watercolors for 4 or 5 months and then I switch to oils, I'm re-diving back in. So the first thing I make isn't going to be a masterpiece, you know, it's going to be a nice progress piece.
How do you pick what you're going to work in, what medium you're going to work in? Let's say you have an idea. How do you know what medium it's going to be in? And then how do you balance doing all of those things and learning all of those things?
I don't even know if I know. I know that's weird. I think something in my gut tells me, honestly, I think maybe because of practice through all of them, if I think of communicating something and I'm like, well, this would look better with a different transparency versus opacity, or sometimes it's just, oh man, I really want to work on wood. I love working on wood instead of canvas, you know, or paper. And so typically I like using oil paints on wood a lot, and watercolors I like doing on watercolor paper. You can do that on wood too. I feel like the materials kind of lend themselves in a direction that, gosh, that's a great question, because I don't fully know exactly why I do pick what I do sometimes. It's just a gut feeling. You know, when I did the Galaxy Girls, I just knew that I wanted the colors to be combined in such a way that was very minimalistic and delicate. And I just started playing with watercolors, and the first one I did was Elizabeth, and she just came out so wonderfully. And I was like, this is it. You know, I think maybe it's sometimes experimentation, because there's plenty of projects I start that I don't finish because maybe I'm not in the right medium for them.
Yeah. Have you ever tried doing maybe the same subject or the same content, the same sort of basic piece, but in multiple different mediums?
Yeah. And it sometimes does not work out well. Like, I've tried to do Galaxy Girls in acrylics and hot garbage. It didn't come out right. It didn't feel right. And I don't want to get all, like, philosophical and hokey here, but there's this, like, idea of something is meant to be or happen in a certain way because it's meant to be or happen in that certain way. Like, I will procrastinate on doing a project for weeks or days, and I know I'm excited to do it, but I'm just not ready yet, and I just keep procrastinating, and then eventually I do it, and sometimes it's freaking amazing. I mean, super humble here, but, like, it comes out how I want it to come out. And I think, gosh, if I had tried to tackle that 3 days ago, I would have gone in a different direction. I would have used different materials. I would have had something alter it, and it would not have come out the way it came out. So it was, I was, this is just a really great excuse for saying I was meant to procrastinate. But I think, you know, like, certain things are meant to be a certain way. I can't explain why it is. There's some direction the universe is pulling me in when I want to do something. Oh, cut that out. That sounds so dumb.
That is so beautiful. There's no formula. It's just a feeling, and you just kind of know. And I think that's something that maybe most people can relate to, not with art, but just with something. Like, there's something that you're so good at or you're so exposed to that you just kind of know. That's me with cooking. I don't care about the recipe because I just kind of know what to do next. And I just kind of know, like, this will taste good. And I just kind of know how much salt to put in something. You just kind of know.
I'm super jealous because with cooking, I really don't know. And but I still don't really follow recipes super great. Like, I half-heartedly follow them. And so, Lord help the person who eats what I make sometimes. I mean, I do make edible food most of the time, but there have been some Hall of Famers that were terrible.
Keywords, most of the time.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, man. So, because you're an interdisciplinary artist, and we've kind of been there, done that on the podcast with other people where we want to dive really deep into one medium. But if they do like, you know, 20 or so, two dozen mediums, it's hard to pick sort of which one are we going to dive into? And we don't have time for all of them. Do you have kind of, what are your favorite mediums, or what are like the ones that make you feel the most confident? And what are ones that you're like, wow, I really need to work on that more, or, you know, learn more about this medium?
I will start with what I want to be better at. I want to get better at digital painting. I don't know if in the last decade, it's just because that's what I'm seeing so much on Instagram and it's just freaking amazing. Loish is my all-time art hero, and I love what she creates, and I don't want to replicate what she creates, but I want the technical skill that she has so I can create my own style with that. The toughest part about being an interdisciplinary artist is, you know, you hear jack of all trades, master of none. You know, if I just did oil paintings, I could be a master at oil painting. I think I'm pretty okay. I do all right with my oil paintings, but I could be way better. I could be way better in every area, but it's just not in me to go in one direction because, I don't know, my heart just sings to do this and try this and play with that. And I think for me, I love seeing other people who follow one discipline and just put their whole soul into it. But for me, it's just, I like jumping around too much and exploring and learning. And to me, it's like having one flavor. I don't want to just taste one flavor. So, but as far as ones I feel more confident in, I would say, I don't know, watercolors and oils are the ones that I can jump back into a little bit easier than others. Whereas with digital painting or printmaking, it's just a bit tougher. And I love printmaking. You know, I will say one medium I don't enjoy and I have a very hard time with is acrylic paints, ironically, because that is one that a lot of folks love for many reasons. They're less expensive. They're easier to clean. They don't smell as bad. They dry faster. You know, in general, folks like that. I have used them a lot in the past, but in the last year or two, I've barely touched acrylics. And when I have, I don't enjoy it. I don't know. I've just sort of moved away from them and maybe I'll move back to them, but they're not my thing.
Do you struggle to find balance between all your different mediums?
Yes. In art and in just creative endeavors, I would say the biggest balance is between visual art and music because I dabble in music. I used to play it a lot more frequently. And, you know, now I just kind of pick it up like 1 month a year.
Plug for the RPM challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, I've done four or five times now. And when I was in my early to mid 20s, I did it a lot more with a band, but then I stopped doing that and focused more on my business and my art. That's a hard juggle, I would say.
This is going to sound corny. Did you have sort of like a first love? Like, what was the first medium that you fell in love with?
Oh my goodness. I've been making art since before the third grade. I know that. So I can't tell you what my first love is accurately. Probably crayons. I don't know. But in third grade, my friend Nora Davis, she was writing a series of stories, you know, very Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, mystery. And I was illustrating them in third grade. We were like planning out plots and figuring out illustrations. Did we follow through? I think we made one half of a book probably. But like, I just remember like I wanted to convey things through my art like that. And I loved it. You know, it was so, I don't know. In eighth grade, I won a art competition and it was an art show. It was a school thing, but it was an art show that was in an actual gallery, not in school. It was at some local art gallery. And that was my first exposure to an art gallery and being in a realm where everybody cared about the same thing I cared about. And I arrived and there was a blue ribbon on it. And I didn't even know that was a thing. It just blew my socks off. And I was so happy. And that was a watercolor of a desert scene with cactuses. And it was like, you know, sunset, you know, purples and pinks in the sky. And it was just like all the colors. It was big, you know, it was a big, you know, it was probably 18 by 24 watercolor painting that I did in eighth grade. And my mom hung it up in a very prominent area of our house for years. And I was so proud because she was impressed with it. And, you know, of course you want the approval of your parents. I remember thinking, oh yeah, watercolors are like, yeah, you know, like, so maybe watercolors. If I was a pie chart, there would not be one section that's bigger than others. You know what I mean? Like, they're all, aside from the acrylics that I was bashing earlier, they're all pretty much equal pie slices of oils and watercolors and printmaking and photo transfers and photography and mixed media, like weird, you know, alternative photography, which I don't get to do anymore, but like all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. I just love doing it all. Kind of went off the rails with that question, but
that is just so much. And I am so blown away by your ability to like, balance all of these things, you're about to tackle a medium that's pretty new for you. You're going to paint a mural. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about that?
Oh my God. So scared.
That was such a cute little
I have painted murals before, but never outside, never under the watchful eye of passerbys. I've done murals in the bedrooms of kids of the parents who hired me, and they were actually pretty cool. I did magnetic murals. So I put down magnetic paint first, painted over them. One was a rainforest scene and one was a underwater scene. And then I hand painted magnets of, like, you know, sea turtles and parrots and, you know, different animals. And then they could move the animals around. Now these kids are like going to graduate high school now soon. So it was a long time ago. So it's been a while since I've done a real mural, and I'm working on the rendering right now. Well, by the time this episode comes out, the mural will in theory be done. If it was a success, head on over to our social media for Creative Guts and you'll see it. And if it wasn't, you'll never see anything.
Yeah, just disregard this part.
But it's actually extremely exciting. I'm going to be painting our logo in a way. I'm going to be painting an illustration of the Creative Guts girl, the empowered flying woman who's spilling her guts. I'm scared just because logistically, you know, I'm going to have to get up on a ladder. Not that that frightens me a bunch, but there's just a lot of logistics to it that, you know, when people walk by, I'm just going to have to get used to the fact that I might get comments, I might get weird looks, I might get input that I'm not asking for. But overall, I'm more excited than nervous. I'm really pumped to produce something that I think will be good to feature on the side of Art Up Front Street Studios and Gallery in Exeter, which is where the mural is going to be. And, you know, if it could just even hit one person in a positive way where they think, like, gosh, I want to be an artist. Oh, I want to try to do something creative or inspire someone to get back into something, you know, I don't know, stuff like that.
So a mural leads me to another question. How do you feel about sharing works in progress?
I typically like to share it in my stories on Instagram because it's temporary. I guess I don't love sharing works in a permanent sort of way that are in process, unless there's a real purpose. My intention is the finished piece, but I enjoy seeing other people's process pictures. So I feel like the stories is an appropriate place for me to put it in. I am not at the point in my artistic social media career to consider myself an inspiration to any, you know, like Loish has 2 million followers. What she puts out there really impacts other artists, and other artists are going to look to her as a role model. I'm not that. I've got some followers who enjoy my art. You know, I don't know if necessarily they're following me to see the process pictures. And so I feel like the stories just feels like an appropriate place.
Yeah. I know I love seeing sort of either process photos or process videos, because it gives you a little bit of an inside look of how does it happen? Or if I wanted to do it, where do I start? What does the process look like? I can also see how this is a work in progress and it looks weird and I don't really want you to see it yet because it's not done.
Yeah. I would say process videos, like speed painting videos, I adore. And I do try to put those out there, but I almost put them out there for me. Like, I love watching this sounds again narcissistic, but not in a like, ooh, I'm hot kind of way, but like, I like seeing why I did what I did. Art can be incredibly intentional and it can be incredibly thoughtless, which is weird to say. You can just go down a river of imagination and not necessarily know why you did a certain thing. If I'm drawing the human form, I usually start with the head and I work my way down and I block out the shapes of the body and then I go back in and put more detail in and then do shape. You know, there's a process. But when I watch myself do a drawing of it, I often learn things about myself and my process, stuff that I don't even notice I'm doing, I pick up on, and it can educate me on the next piece. I did a painting of Rainer recently and I did a speed painting of it. And throughout the whole speed painting, it was driving me freaking insane that there was no shadow under her on the wood because she was laying on her back. And then in the very end, I kind of add a shadow and I was thinking, gosh, I want to add more of the environment earlier on because I think it impacts the semi-realism that I'm going for and could help me with some of my lighting decisions or whatnot. So it definitely educates me in that way.
So you learn from your own, you know, process picks in a way. How much sort of creative capacity do you have? Do you feel like you can run out of creative capacity? And do you think that having a creative job uses up some creative capacity that you'd rather spend on yourself?
Yeah, I do think you run out of steam. I'm a graphic designer for a nonprofit that helps new businesses starting out or, you know, businesses that are trying to get a leg up with their marketing and their branding, logos, all that kind of stuff. And it's a weird concept to think, especially for graphic designers, be creative right now and come up with something great right now because we're on a schedule here. Art isn't quite like that. And graphic design is a different form of art, but it's very much communicating an idea. So you have to think, how is this going to communicate and how is it going to be readable? Those are the two big things. And so you're being creative in a few different ways, plus the actual execution and all of that brain power, you know, when you come home after, especially working on something that's, you know, a weird industry, something you're not familiar with, something you don't enjoy, you know, unfortunately, you know, you don't love everything. And there are some clients, I don't love their industry. You know, I don't particularly have a association or relation to a certain thing. So I don't get an automatic idea, you know. And on the flip side, I did a piece for Anna Chocolate and it was just, I mean, who doesn't love chocolate? But it's not even that. It's her business already had the direction it was already going in. You know, it felt very natural to work with her on a, you know, illustration for one of her packaging. At the end of the day, if you're using a lot of creative juices, that can get extremely exhausting. If you're already working on a piece at home or in your studio and you're super jazzed on it, you know, you'll rally and you'll go for it. But if you're kind of in a transition period between a piece of art and another piece of art, sometimes you just don't have it in you. And it's very frustrating because that's more where your heart lies. You and I were both just watching Turkish Delights do a wonderful, delightful class on Instagram today. And at the end of it, he said one of the biggest rules is give yourself a break, like take a break, step up, walk away, and just don't push it when you don't need to push it. And I think a lot of times when I'm working on a piece and it's coming out like hot garbage, like when I go to the studio at Art at Front Street, number 3, I come home, my husband's here doing his thing, and he said, how was it? And I basically report on like, oh, I saw Dawn. Oh, I saw Rose. You know, this was great. I got to see people, which I'm really missing right now. but then I basically say like, oh, it was a great art night, or oh, it was a crappy art night. And he's like, oh, how come? And, you know, I just kept spinning my wheels. I kept trying, you know, back to the question you were saying. I tried this in acrylics and then watercolors and then oils, even though I thought that would be crazy. And they all just look garbage. Like, they're just look terrible. Like, ugh. And I just wasted materials and I wasted time. And I hate wasting time. I hate it because if you know me, I'm kind of obsessed with time and a schedule and being productive. I want to be productive. And that's a whole nother thing that goes back into like, we're going to die someday and we need to make a vote on the earth. And da, da, da. You know, that's my own stuff. But if I have a crappy art night, it's just a waste to me. I didn't get to make something great for myself or for the world. It doesn't matter. It just, I didn't get to do what I am here on this stupid planet to do, you know? And so that's very frustrating. And then other times I come home and I say, oh my God, I made this thing and it was so cool. And then I did this and oh, I can't wait to go back because I'm going to do this. And he's like, okay, settle down. That's great, Laura. Let's watch some anime.
Is there any like rhyme or reason or pattern to what's a great art night versus a art night?
I think it's just getting out something I meant to get out. You know, I'm a figure artist primarily, and I will paint a person and it looks like a person and she or he is doing what I want them to do. And it's a good night, you know, and especially, you know, I seem to be obsessed with hair. Oddly, I have done pieces where the hair just looks so stupid and it's not going the way I want it to. And I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Like when I can't figure out why I'm not communicating what I want to communicate through my art, that is really frustrating. Sometimes it's the whole stepping away thing Mike Durkee's talking about that I think is just stop spinning your wheels and go home. And sometimes I do, and sometimes I keep there and I keep spinning them like an idiot. And that's what's great about Art Up Front Street. 9 times out of 10, someone else is there and you can take a break and talk to another artist and talking to another artist when you have artist block is so important because creativity is a feedback loop. It is 100% that. And when I am talking to Dawn Amy of Dawn Amy Designs or Ann Kenny or Deb Wheeler Bean, when I talk to Deb Wheeler Bean, just her voice inspires me. And I just think like, okay, it's going to be okay, you know, and it gets me back in the right mindset. And not that I like having lots of folks around when I'm creating necessarily, but Art Up Front Street and Artist Collective in general typically has a good balance of community and talking with folks and getting that feedback loop and your own independent space to create without interruption.
And it's folks who get it, really, like when you were in art school, and I know we talk about this all the time, we have so many reasons to say thank you to Art Up Front Street, and I know mm-hmm. that has something that's been super important for you is having that creative community.
Oh, I love it. I am 100 times more productive. I am way more of a go-getter when I have a creative community that I'm a part of. You know, I had it in college, and when I look back at what I produced in college, like, there wasn't a freaking moment I wasn't making art. We also had a dry campus and I didn't drink till after I was 21. So that's probably part of it too. But I just freaking made art all the time. And we had art parties. We would watch, you know, we would work on artist trading cards while we watched, you know, rom-coms in the TV room. So even though we were being social and watching Notting Hill, we were also, you know, making art in some way, even if it was in a casual sort of way. And I would leave my door open and I'd work on a stone sculpture in my room, which made a huge mess, but people would come in and talk to me about it. You know, like, it was just, oh, it was so lovely. I loved college so much. And I went to Chester College. It was an amazing experience. And I'm so glad I went.
I have one more question before we go to rapid fire. Your plan was to be an artist on the side outside of your day job, and you were never really planning on being an artist full time because, you know, that's the dream, but whatever. Mm. How did you end up being an artist from sunup to sundown? How did you end up, you know, incorporating so much graphic design and photography and videography into your day job?
I think the key was, even after you finish college, you don't stop learning. I ended up trying to consume as much as I could. A lot of it's self-taught. I just played and practiced and tried different things. And I think I've been lucky enough to have a few different jobs where they recognized I was an artist. And, oh, heck, can you design this t-shirt for the firefighter? Oh, our annual report needs a really cool cover. Can you do something with that? And so, sure, I can paint till the sun goes down, but how do I do that? You know, I mean, this was a while ago, but okay, you learn InDesign. I already knew Photoshop. It's different, but it's kind of the same. And oh, so is Illustrator. Like, they're all kind of the same. They all have the same tools, but they're in slightly different directions that help you accomplish what you want to accomplish. If you want to work in logos, you know, you need a vector image, so you work in Illustrator. And if you want to manipulate photos, you work in Photoshop. But you can do some of the same things in both programs. I just kept learning and learning. I eventually made the switch to the Regional Economic Development Center, REDC, a wonderful nonprofit. And my boss was generous enough to give me more leeway with some creativity. And she really recognized that I had a drive and a passion for this direction. And I kept consuming more and more. You know, REDC paid for some classes on the side here and there, not for a degree, just for my own fulfillment of, like, I want to be better at my job and I want to do this thing. And eventually she recognized I was at the point where I could be just a graphic designer. You know, I was doing admin stuff and office stuff, and she knew I was gonna leave. Like, she could tell, I think, you know, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think she could tell, you're gonna just go follow your dreams. You know, you're gonna go do something that where you get to be creative 100% of the time. And so she figured out a way to make it happen. And she said, you know, you can do this here, but not for a few years. You know, I'm not going to create a position that I can't fund the next year. We are growing as an organization. We will get there. If you need to leave, I understand. But if you wait, we're going to create this position for you because we will be at that point in a few years. And there were times I really considered, this isn't where my heart is. I need to do more design and art stuff. And REDC is just a really great company. It's a very hard company to leave because it has a wonderful mission. It has a lot of great benefits. I mean, I can bring my dog to work. You know, it has been a little family and a little home. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to keep learning and get better and better and better. I took a videography course and now I make videos for some of our clients. And, you know, obviously I do that with Creative Guts and Artful Harper. And fortunately, I think my boss just helped me get where I wanted to be by recognizing that I'm never going to stop learning. Like, I'm going to be 88 years old someday if I live that long, and I'm still going to take a class in something, you know? Like, you just, you're always growing and developing as a human, and life, I don't know, to me would be boring if you didn't keep learning.
It's a really beautiful story because it's that combination of your desire to consume and learn and having good bosses and just like being up for the assignment when a boss or a client was like, oh, I need a new logo. And you're like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've even learned skills I didn't expect that I would need for my job. I'm a design advisor as well. You know, that's part of the job, graphic designer and design advisor. So I advise companies on how to do better graphic design, how to reach people better, you know, how to communicate better. And I think I'm a fairly decent communicator. I talk a lot and I feel like I do okay with that. But I have learned some things, especially from one of our coworkers, Chris Duffy, a lot about how to manage people and to help guide them and give advice and, you know, the mentorship role that you're in. I had never had any exposure to leading in that way. And that's a skill that I've gained from this position that I think is just invaluable. I think it's so great because I think you become a better listener that way and you can try to help people more.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. Do I do a good job at it? I don't know. I can't tell you that.
It doesn't matter. You're still learning.
Yes. Always a work in progress, right? Yeah, oh, it's so cheesy.
Exactly. We're all on the spectrum of learning somewhere. Laura Harper Lake, it is ready for rapid fire. I believe you know how this works.
I'm buckling up. I am ready to go. But my question for you is, did you throw some curveballs in there for me?
You're just going to have to wait and see. Are there any mediums that you haven't worked with, but you'd like to?
What I would most like to explore if I was rich and had access and time through the makerspace, Port City Makerspace, is welding and creating stuff like that, which technically I did do some welding a little bit in college, like just one day, this like one program, but that was, you know, over a decade ago. So I feel like metalworks, I used to do stone sculpture. That was a huge part of me. That's actually a medium that I stepped away from because of, I think, health reasons and space reasons. I used to carve soapstone and alabaster, and that was a huge component of me. I was kind of a sculptor primarily, and I think I inhaled a lot of the stone that I shouldn't have, and I never had the resources to have a place that like ventilated properly, and I just decided it's too cumbersome. I don't think it's probably healthy for me anymore, and it, you know, someday I'll get back into it maybe. Yeah, I would say like metalworks and welding and stuff.
I'd love to see you in like the metal section of the Port City Makerspace. That'd be so cool.
Oh, that would be so cool. But, you know, until I win $1 million, I can just like play all the time. You know, that'll be tough.
How many works in progress, abandoned or not, do you think you have laying around somewhere?
I just raided my studio to bring stuff back here. And, you know, those nebulas that I did, I have a bunch of half done nebulas that I never finished. So I've probably got 5 or 6 of those in the suitcase back there. And I've got 2 or 3 of the Adrift the Surface girls there. And then literally dozens on my iPad Pro. Like, you could just scroll for days on stuff I never finished. And almost all of the Woodland Above series, I really want to do a top layer on the sky of the trees, the negative space that I'm painting. I think with the oils on the wood, it would be far more vibrant. So technically those are all unfinished. So that's about 13 or 14 right there. So a lot. If you need it to be rapid, you can cut that all out. And I'll just say a lot.
Too many to count,
yeah.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Okay. You open Spotify. You're going to listen to some tunes. What are you going to play first?
Right now, I am obsessed with a band called Cave Town. There are 2 songs I would recommend checking out. One is Boys Will Be Bugs, and one is called Green. And this guy is like, I don't know, 17. He's like another Billie Eilish. Like, he's just super good. And I love his music. And I've been playing that for the last like 2 weeks on Spotify constantly.
That's awesome. It's not even what I thought you were gonna say.
I know. Yeah. It jumps around.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
What's your favorite taste?
I don't know. That is such a hard question.
That's funny because you've asked it of so many people.
I know. I'm such a jerk. I guess, you know, this probably isn't it, but like at the Green Elephant, there is some coconut sorbet, and it's like the most slipperiest flavor you could ever have, which is such a weird way to describe it, but it just trickles down your friggin' soul. Like, it's so good.
What's your favorite smell?
Sawdust, because that's the smell I associate with my dad, who has passed away a long time ago, and he was a carpenter, and whenever I smell sawdust, I think it brings me back to him.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sound?
When my cat runs, her legs make this like do 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 sound. Like, it's just like a tiny little, like, and so my husband and I go do 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 do, and it's just, I don't know, I just love the sound of her running. And I know that's so weird. I don't know why that just popped into my head, but like, it just makes me smile. It without a doubt makes me smile. In general, music though, I mean, like, I just love music to death. So, but that's kind of hard. That's all encompassing. So as far as like a weird little sound, like do, 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 do.
That was so cute. That made me smile.
Yeah, like, just imagine a semi chubby kitty running around on hardwood floors, and it's do 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 do.
What's your favorite texture?
It'd be so lame to say my cat, because like everybody says that, I think.
Cat's an awesome answer.
I love petting Rainer. She's got the most, like, one of the softest cats on the planet, because everyone who pets her says, oh my God, she is so soft. And I'm like, no, that's how it always goes down.
That's so cute.
You're gonna have to do a bunch of beeps. I guess I've been in a swearing mood.
Yeah, you're a sailor today. What other artist has influenced you the most?
Loish.
I knew you were gonna
say
that.
Yeah, and I don't even necessarily have a style that looks like her. She, aside from being an artist, is just a freaking adorable human being. And I think she handles her popularity very gracefully. She is very much wanting to teach others and help them. She's incredibly humble about it, and it's super endearing. And she's super cute. She's got like this like chipmunk smile, so I think I have a girl crush on her as well. I just all in all, if I could meet someone in the world right now, it would be her. Yeah, I love following her, and I don't contribute to many Patreons at all. I'm pretty sure I don't contribute to any except Loish's. It's $5 a month. You get early content. You get like behind the scenes sketches and process videos. And she's incredibly authentic. And I think I, you know, if I ever social media wise reached that level of success, you know, if I had an art book, a couple art books out, you know, if I ever got to that point, she's the kind of person I would want to emulate.
All right, clincher question. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
If I could go back in time and tell myself one thing, it would have been to get healthy and treat my body better way back then. It's been a struggle, and if I could go back in time, I would say to myself, you are going to be a more confident and happy person. Not that you need to lose weight, but that you need to be healthy and feel more confident about yourself, because I definitely think a lot of my nervous to speak in public issues stem from not feeling confident physically, and that sucks. People shouldn't feel that way. The advice you give your friends is the advice you should give yourself, and if I had a friend who was feeling this way, I would be like, girl, shut up. You look great. You're awesome. Don't worry about that. Just take care of yourself so that you're healthy. You know, like, that's it. It doesn't really matter. But it really does matter. Like, it does. It does impact me and affect me. And I think that kind of thing affects all the realms. If I'm asked to speak in public about art, which I was a couple months ago, and I went and spoke and lectured at a school, and a part of me did think, gee, are they going to look at me and think like, you know, be just snap judgment. And that's so crappy that my brain goes there, you know, and I see that. And I'm working on losing weight as I have been my whole freaking life, but I'm not accomplishing it yet. And I think it would have been easier to accomplish when I had the 20-year-old metabolism, not the 34-year-old metabolism. And it's going to only get harder. It's not necessarily about how I look, but just about how you feel. And I don't feel my healthiest still. I feel very healthy as an artist. I feel like I'm making the best art that's okay for me to make. Like, I'm doing my best. But in the health department, I don't think I'm doing my best. And this is, you know, embarrassing to say publicly, like, but it's true. So, like, just treat your body the way it should be treated.
That's really relatable advice. And I think what I really love out of that was like, you should give yourself the same advice you give your friends. And I feel like so many of us don't do that.
We don't.
We give our friends advice that we would never take.
We are 10 times harder on ourselves. But like, I'm saying this is for me. I'm not trying to say this for anybody else because I really don't impose any thought like that on anybody else at all. I'm trying to be super authentic. And so that's my answer. It's not a pretty one, but there it is.
In the name of authenticity.
Yeah. I admire that in other people, so I want to be like that, I guess. This is, again, just for me. Like, just my advice to myself, not to people in general. If you're looking for inspiring young artists, this is what you should do. Like, just keep practicing. Like, don't stop practicing your art. That's it.
Laura, thanks so much for being on the Creative Guts podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time, and I loved all your questions. I mean, having a conversation with you is the easiest thing in the world. So it was really fun.
So with that,
show us your creative guts.
Another huge thank you to Laura Harper Lake for joining us on the other side of the microphone on Creative Guts today. I admire Laura for how much she does and how much energy she has in her sort of creative capacity. And I've got a zillion or so more questions for her that I would love to talk about and get her perspective on as somebody who's been an artist their entire lives, which is incredible to me. You should check out Laura's work because it's beautiful. You can find her at artfulharperstudios.com, and you can find Artful Harper Studios on Facebook and Instagram. Her handle is Artful Harper Studios. As always, you'll find those links and more at creativegutspodcast.com, and Creative Guts Podcast is also on Facebook and Instagram, so you can hang out with us on social media. Thanks so much for tuning in to Creative Guts, and we'll be back next Wednesday with another episode.
I mean, it's like athletes who are watching videos of themselves like, oh, that slam dunk, you know, you're dropping your arm too fast or whatever, you know.
You can tell that Laura doesn't know basketball.
I don't really like that. Max is walking up the stairs. Hey, buddy, lay down.
Stop tip-tapping.
This decade become the biggest trend in...
I love you, Max.
Cut out all this weirdness.
Oh, boy. That's funny because I can't hear it.
I just hit three buttons that did not feel appropriate. They did not. Oh, I hit the one that was bad. Because drugs.
Are you selling drugs?
Get high on my art.